Canty and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Rolling along on hump day, this is Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests appear via the Goodyear Hotline. Nets guard Kyrie Irving is scheduled to make his regular season debut after clearing COVID protocols in Indianapolis against the Pacers. For more on that, we're going to go out to the Goodyear Hotline and bring on New York Daily News Nets reporter Christian Winfield. And Christian, the question that everybody wants to know, after hearing Steve Nash talk about the plan to play Kyrie Irving a chunk of minutes in this game, everybody wants to know exactly what it's going to look like tonight when Kyrie Irving puts on a uniform and steps on the floor for the Nets.
Well, you know, if you talk to Kyrie's teammates, they're saying, hey, Kyrie looks just like Kyrie. And if Kyrie looks exactly like the player we saw last year, then, I mean, the Pacers arena is going to be on fire tonight, because that's a player who can cross over anybody, who can hit almost any shot, finish any layup at the rim. I mean, yes, he's been away from the game for months now, and as we've heard from him, I mean, it was hard for him to even find pickup basketball games against pros, because all the pros were playing in the NBA or overseas, and even the college kids, the college students, athletes were playing their respective seasons, and Kyrie's bouncing around North Jersey trying to find some run, and now he's getting his legs back under him, and he's finally playing against some pros again, and everyone's saying that he's happy. You know, he said it's like getting back on a bike, or it's like being a kid in the candy shop, and the joy is there again. And I think that's what it's going to be like. We're going to see Kyrie Irving back on the floor, happy to be next to his teammates, happy to be playing in the NBA again. And like he said, you know, this is where he belongs, you know, and I can't wait to watch him play tonight.
Christian, is there any plan here with the Nets, or are they kind of drawing it up in the dirt as far as what Kyrie's role with the team is going to look like now?
Sheesh, that's a great question. You know, I think the plan as of now is to kind of just like figure out where his body is. You know, we asked Steve Nash about minutes limit, and there's no necessary limit in place, but they don't want to overburden him, right? 38, 40 minutes right out the gate. I think we'll see something in that 25 to 33 range, maybe. Because they do want to see where his body is now, right? I mean, like I said, he's been away from the game for so long, and playing pickup and playing NBA basketball, getting up and down the floor versus, you know, getting those individual workouts in at home. I mean, we had players complaining about being out of shape after a week and a half in COVID protocols. I mean, Kyrie's been out the game for months now. But I do think the Nets understand that Kyrie can really make that much of a difference on the road if he's going to be available for the second half of the season, every road game. I mean, they've had so many games where Kevin Durant and James Harden have had to shoulder those minutes. And Steve Nash said today, hey, you know, Kyrie coming back doesn't necessarily mean KD and James play less minutes, because those guys want to play as many minutes as possible. But what it does is, in my opinion at least, it opens the door up for earlier blowouts, right? And if you can get those 20 to 25 point advantages in the second and third quarter, then there's no need to bring Kyrie, KD, or James back in that fourth quarter, right? And I think that's where we start to see some of the burden alleviated from the three stars. And it really just jumpstarts this team's offense. I mean, the Nets have lost three games in a row, and I've written this for the New York Daily News. Each of these losses have been worse than the last one. I mean, they got waved off the floor by Joel Embiid. Then you take that loss to the Clippers, whose best players were Reggie Jackson and Eric Bledsoe. And then the loss to the Grizzlies was just particularly embarrassing. I mean, they were down 28 points. Steve Nash goes to the rookies, and the rookies cut the lead down to 10 in the fourth quarter. You bring Kyrie back in, not only are you getting that offense, but you're kind of getting a breath of fresh air and a jolt of life, and that's what the Nets need right now.
Talking with New York Daily News Nets reporter Christian Winfield on Canty and Golic Jr. And Christian, I wanted to ask you specifically as it pertains to James Harden. We saw last year him taking more of a facilitator's role when the big three were out on the court together. I think it was a matter of 14 games. But we saw James Harden taking a back seat to Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving as far as scoring goes. James Harden this year, I mean, prior to the Memphis Grizzlies game, he was on a tear. I want to say it was four straight games north of 30 points. So exactly how do we expect Kyrie Irving's presence in the road games to impact what we see from James Harden?
You know, that's an interesting question, because I've asked that of James Harden in the past. I said, hey, you know, last year you kind of had to play more facilitator with Kyrie and with KD out there. And this year, you know, there's no Kyrie. Up until now, there had been no Kyrie. And he said it had been a balance that he was still trying to work out, deciding when to be aggressive, when to get his teammates involved. And to his credit, I mean, since the day he came into Brooklyn, all he's ever said was, hey, I want to find ways to make my teammates better. I don't want to get in the way of KD's greatness, Kyrie's greatness. I want to find ways to make everybody better. But now what we're seeing this year, especially in games that Kyrie wasn't here, is an aggressive James Harden makes everybody around him better. It opens up the floor for all of his teammates. And then once he understood that, okay, he might not get the foul calls earlier on, but he has to continue to fight through those plays and still finish, we started to see James kind of turn a corner here. So I think that is going to be something to watch out for, because he's starting to hit his stride a bit in terms of when to be aggressive in scoring and playmaking. And now you're going to reintegrate Kyrie, who, I mean, once he touches the ball, you know he sees that basket and he's going for it. But at the end of the day, I think these guys all know, number one, they're going to have to sacrifice. Number two, they've got no choice but to figure out a way to make this work. And when you've got three guys who are as talented as they are, I don't think that's going to be an issue. I think it's just going to take some time. And as you pointed out, I mean, the time isn't consistent, right? Because you're going to have a road game now, and then you're back home tomorrow, and there's no Kyrie after that, and then you go back on the road. So it's going to be an adjustment period. But, you know, I think the entire team knows what's at stake. What's at stake is a championship, and they're going to figure it out.
Christian, Chris has brought this up a couple of times, this possibility that Kyrie Irving, if he comes back and plays well, could become a tradable asset for this team. Is there any chance that during the course of this year, they think about parting ways with a guy that's only a part-time employee right now?
That's a tough question. I think the Nets would be more inclined to take their chances, hoping that Kyrie decides to walk back and get vaccinated at some point by the end of the season. You know, there have been reports, and I don't know if he's willing to take any vaccine, no matter where it comes from. There have been reports of a plant-based vaccine. Who knows? That could be on his radar. Maybe that's what he's waiting for. But I think the Nets understand that if you do trade Kyrie, number one, you're not going to get equal value back, right? It's basically impossible. And number two, if you trade Kyrie, I mean, what message does that send to KD? Right, who is, you know, that's who he came here with, right? He came here with Kyrie and with DeAndre Jordan. And this is a guy who they wanted to build. They did build this together, right? They built this championship team in a way together. They came here and built this in Brooklyn together. I don't think Kevin wants that to happen. I don't think James wants that to happen. I think they want to find a way to figure it out. And to be honest, I think even if you only have Kyrie on the road in the playoffs, that's better than anything you're going to get back in a trade at home or on the road. So I think the Nets take their chances. Whether they decide to pull a trade or if they're interested in pulling off a trade at this point, I don't know. But if I was the GM, I think I would just, you know what I'm saying, play it out, ride the season out, see if A, Kyrie makes a change in his willingness to get vaccinated, or B, what this team looks like. I mean, if Kyrie can – the Nets are – I mean, we give the Nets a lot of crap because they're a championship team. And you know, when you're a championship team, everything is going to be scrutinized a little bit more. But to their credit, they've played really well up until this last stretch. I mean, the defense has been better than anyone could have imagined. The offense, I mean, when you've got Kevin Durant and James Harden, it'll find its way. And now you're going to incorporate Kyrie Irving in part-time. I mean, that's taking to another level. And on top of that, they haven't even had Joe Harris for about 14 games. So it's a team that's still trying to figure itself out. They've won games with 8 players, with 9 players. I think they'll be fine.
And that starts tonight, that process of figuring out what this year's team can really look like as Kyrie Irving gets set to make his debut against the Pacers. Christian, we appreciate the time as always, man. Enjoy it. We'll look forward to talking to you again soon.
Thanks for having me. Anytime.
Christian Winfield, again, Nets reporter at the New York Daily News, kind enough to join us on the Goodyear Hotline. ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance. Small business protection just got easier. With more than 30 coverage options available, Progressive has you covered. More at progressivecommercial.com. Coming up next, why the decision makers and the powers that be in college football, including the man that spends more time hoisting that championship trophy than anyone else, don't have a single worry about the current college football postseason format. We'll get to that after this word from Body Armor. All right, guys. Let Body Armor Lite help you achieve your fitness goals this year. Body Armor Lite's the low-calorie sports drink that's hydrating your active lifestyle. It's got no artificial sweeteners, no sugar added, and only 20 calories per 16-ounce bottle. And you get flavors like peach mango, tropical coconut, strawberry lemonade. My God. Body Armor Lite is keeping you hydrated during your workouts and your busy days. Because remember, sports talk gas bags, we need hydration too. From now until April 30th, buy $20 of any Body Armor product and earn $10 in fitness cash towards select fitness retailers nationwide. Learn more at bacommittofit.com. That's bacommittofit.com. Why playoff change isn't top of mind next on ESPN Radio.
The College Football National Championship, presented by AT&T. The College Football National Championship, presented by AT&T. The top-ranked Alabama Crimson Tide look to repeat as national champions when they face Kirby Smart's third-ranked Georgia Bulldogs. Coverage begins Monday at 7 Eastern on ESPN Radio and on ESPN. This is ESPN Radio.
Kenny and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Kenny. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests appear via the Goodyear hotline. And Gojo, we got some news out of the college football world regarding the college football playoff. As we know, we're going to get Georgia and Alabama for the second time in the 8 seasons of the college football player era in the national championship game. And so with the lopsided conference football, college football playoff semis, people are asking themselves about what expansion of the college football playoff would ultimately look like. And it seems like there are some mixed feelings when it comes to the commissioners of the conferences around the landscape of college football and Jack Swarbrick, AD of Notre Dame.
Yeah, so this conversation pretty much comes up on a yearly basis now, because once you hear the leaders of college football mention the idea of expansion the way that we did a couple of summers ago, it's going to be on everyone's mind, because now you know it's serious. And people look at all this and get tired of the same old thing. That is the story of college football. But what's interesting is how we go about this now, because you heard a ton of people, Chris, after the games this weekend say, if this is the result we're going to continue to get here, why would we want any more of it? They even asked the most powerful man in college football, Nick Saban, the Alabama Crimson Tide's head coach, at their press conference about CFP expansion. And you can imagine he didn't give a bleep. Chris, I do appreciate that Nick Saban is self-aware enough to say, hey, I don't got to worry about making decisions, because whatever you guys draw up, I'm going to be here regardless.
Yeah, but Nick Saban also recognizes that if you do expand the college football playoff, that means there's more rounds that Alabama has to potentially get knocked out, and Nick Saban ain't really here for all of that. He didn't necessarily seem to point. And then to justify his position, he threw out the, oh, we're going to minimize the importance of the other bowl games outside of the college football playoff. So good on Nick Saban for having that level of awareness. But at the same time, I'm not one of those people that's out there and that's opposed to college football playoff expansion, although I do think it ends up leading to the same results. The top tier programs, that being Alabama, Georgia, and in recent years, Clemson, those are going to be the schools that are in the mix to compete for a national championship. And the other teams are essentially receiving a consolation prize by being able to have an opportunity to show up in the college football playoff.
Yeah, Chris, I think you're right on that front here. And that's basically been the argument that I've settled on in the last year. You're not going to change much in the way of outcomes, but outcomes is not what this is really about here. Like, this was reflected. The conference commissioners who are meeting about this stuff right now, about the possibility of expansion, say the lopsided nature of this really doesn't matter. First off, it doesn't matter to the ratings people either. We saw those ratings come out. The 3 highest rated games of the season, at least I believe on ESPN's air, were the CFP semifinal games in the Rose Bowl. So people are going to continue to tune in. Sports, live sports, has proved to be like the one consistent commodity. But Chris, in all of this, the bowl game's not meaning as much for Nick Saban. That ship has sailed. That's about money. That's about kids understanding that their NFL futures are more valuable than ever, and seeing all the money that's not going their way in college. Like, the one defensible argument, Chris, that I can make against expanding further than we've got now is the argument that you've still got players who are unpaid, and NIL does not mean that they are paid employees, who would in a 12-team playoff have the potential of maybe playing 17 games in a season to ultimately winless. Like, you'd be adding more without any added benefit or value to them. And you know this as someone who's a part of the NFL Players Association for years. That fight to get to where we got to now, 17 regular season games, was always predicated on the idea, what are the players going to get in exchange for that? And the answer here is nothing. Bupka.
Yeah, and that's the thing that has to be concerned. You know, they are student athletes, and I'm going to put that in air quotes because we know what these head coaches prioritize, and it ain't academics. But at the same time, we've seen this work at the FCS level when they're going through a playoff system. And so I don't think it would be too much to ask these kids to be able to go out there, given the incentive, you know, being something that you know, the incentive out there to compete for a national championship. I think that's the thing that you would get a lot of student athletes to sign up and be on board with. I got a chance to compete for a national championship, as opposed to playing in some other type of bowl game, I think that would create a lot more interest from the athlete standpoint. So I get where you're coming from. There is an added strain on the bodies of these players. But when you start talking about playoff-style football, whether it's in college or in the NFL, the chance to compete for a championship, I think that's too enticing for players to pass up.
Well, and they won't have a choice. Like, in all of this, I'd like that to be considered, but we're both smart enough to know nobody making these decisions gives a bleep about that. Like, that's just the reality. They're not going to consider players' bodies when it comes to making this decision. What they are going to consider is exactly what you just described. You don't like as many players opting out? Hey, 12 teams playing means we got 6 bowl games in that first round and adding more beyond it that are all going to have championship potential attached to them. That is something potentially more enticing for a player who is on the bubble there. And it's certainly, and again, the most important part in my eyes in all of this, Chris, is expanding the way we talk about all this. Mm. We talk about more teams for longer down the stretch of the season. That is partially on us. We have to cover and make sure we're looking at the entire picture of this. And an expanded playoff would certainly force that. So again, for Nick Saban, I understand his argument and potential opposition to this. He's going to be okay. Alabama, Georgia, Ohio State, they're all going to be okay in this.
No doubt about it, Gojo. But the one thing I will say is, if they do expand playoffs and we're talking about more rounds, please don't have a trophy for every single game that we play. I don't need to see that. Who needs a trophy for winning a college football playoff semifinal game? Do you really want that if you don't win it all? Do you really? Just saying.
Yeah, no, but I mean, listen, trophy makers got to eat too in this. That's the whole point. Everyone in this makes money, except the players. Everybody in this, even the trophy making people, got to go out here and get this college football playoff bread, because that's what this is all about. And that is why, regardless of the lopsided results here, we're going to see expansion march on forward, because more is always better for the people involved. We'll wait and see if there's a tipping point with the players on that. But for now, this thing is going to steadily march until we get to that point. We're brought to you by Goodyear, helping you discover the road ahead. Goodyear, more driven. Coming up next, Aaron Rodgers firing back at one of his critics, which has our friend Chris Canty ready to fire back at Aaron Rodgers, because I promise you, people do not forget. We will get to Chris Canty's personal encounter with Aaron Rodgers after this word from Wendy's. Now, Wendy's knows better breakfasts start with a better biscuit. Get a light and flaky Wendy's breakfast biscuit with bacon or sausage, egg and cheese. These hot and buttery treasures, they come stacked with oven-baked applewood smoked bacon or savory breakfast sausage with fresh cracked egg and cheese. So, don't risk your biscuit someplace else. Get to your nearest Wendy's drive-thru during breakfast hours, obviously. And then get your Wendy's breakfast biscuit with sausage or bacon, egg and cheese. Limited time only at participating U.S. Wendy's. Chris Canty's personal encounter with Aaron Rodgers that has stood the test of time. Next on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests appear via the Goodyear Hotline. And Gojo, it's Wednesday. So on Canty and Golic Jr., you know we always have to include a segment that we have affectionately dubbed People Don't Forget. So it's time that we kick that off right now.
Hey, Greg, why don't you go f*** your pants again?
That was like 8 years ago.
People don't forget. Forget.
Yeah, so this one's a special one today here, Chris. as we get down the stretch of the regular season here, we are preparing for the NFL's MVP to be awarded to Aaron Rodgers. Like, run from it if you must. Aaron Rodgers has played exceptional football this year. The Green Bay Packers went 13-3 again for the third straight year in the regular season, largely on the arm of what will be one of the more efficient seasons of Aaron Rodgers' career, which is saying something. But that didn't stop one man, Hub Arkush, from firing out at Aaron Rodgers. He's one of, I didn't know this, there are only 50 MVP voters for the NFL MVP in the Associated Press. And he went out and said that he was not voting for Aaron Rodgers for MVP because he was, quote, the biggest jerk in the league. This was Aaron Rodgers making sure you know he knows. So calls Hub Arkush a bum, Chris, and then claims that it's because he's not vaccinated here. Now, Arkush went out and publicly disclosed after the fact, his quote was, "I made a big mistake last night." Yeah, you think?
Yeah, Hub made a mistake. But you know what, Gojo? I'm going to stand with Hub on this one.
Oh, no.
I'm going to stand with him. You know why?
No.
Because Aaron Rodgers is a jerk. And I did make up my mind that he was a jerk before the season started. You know why? You know why? We had a chance to talk about this during the break, and I feel like it bears repeating, so I'm going to bring it up on air to our audience. It goes back to 2011, Gojo, and that was from Aaron Rodgers' own mouth, one of his best teams that he's ever been a part of. They were 15-1 during the regular season, and my New York Football Giants, a team that I was a part of, we went up to Lambeau Field in the divisional round. And in the midst of beating the brakes off of Green Bay, I think the final score was 37-20, something like that, the Green Bay offense decided that they wanted to go no huddle to try to get back in the game. So, in the process, we're playing. It's the heat of battle. I end up getting injured on a play, and Aaron Rodgers is barking at the officials saying that I'm not hurt, I'm just faking it so they can't go no huddle. So the trainers from the Giants come out. They get me off the field. I kind of walk off leaning on their shoulders, and the game proceeds. Needless to say, we end up getting a dub going on to win the Super Bowl. After we won the Super Bowl, I wasn't able to enjoy the celebration and the festivities because I was busy having knee surgery at the hospital for special surgery. So Aaron Rodgers, I knew he was a jerk because in that moment, rather than to express concern for a colleague, because at the end of it, that's what we all are, even though we're on different teams, you want to go to the officials and say that I'm faking a major injury. Turns out to be a major injury on my part. That's when I knew that Aaron Rodgers was a jerk.
Oh, see, this is like the most meta, like Russian egg doll of people don't forget segments ever.
A lot of layers there. It's a lot of layers.
There is a lot of layers, but that is totally understandable because, again, that is your body that man was railing against on there. For someone in Aaron Rodgers who's talked a lot about what he can do with his body this year, he seemed to be awful comfortable telling you what you were doing with yours in that situation, Chris. So I get it.
I can't believe it, man. Still can't believe it. Now, couldn't walk for 2 months that offseason. But I'm faking an injury in the game. Yeah, you're right, Aaron Rodgers. I was faking that. That was all for TV.
How deeply personal this is
right
here.
It is personal. It is personal.
You know what? It is personal. It's allowed to be personal because, again, it was your body. It was your livelihood in that spot here. So, again, we've got Hubbard Kush saying that he's not going to vote for Aaron Rodgers, so Aaron Rodgers calls him a bum, which I can kind of understand. Like, Hub, baby, you got to stop doing this for the rest of us, all right, here? You're one of 50. I understand this is not the express opinion of everyone who's going to vote for the MVP, but you just gave Aaron all the ammunition he needs to go out there and play the victim card in this spot, and we don't need that right here. It was a bad statement. Aaron's going to win the MVP because that stuff should not be considered in a way that's enough to knock him off the perch here, but Chris Canty, you have much more of a leg to stand on here because that man literally tried to come at you when you didn't have a leg to stand on.
Yeah, he came for me. Exactly. He came for me in a moment of weakness, and I don't appreciate it. And here we are, what, 11 years later? And you can tell I still feel some kind of way about it. Still feel a way about it.
Man, you know what? We support that level of petty around here at this show. We are going to back up our teammates here right now. So hell yeah, Chris Canty.
It makes me feel good to know that that was the best team that he feels like he ever had.
That is true.
And to know that we beat the brakes off him in Green Bay. The game was over at halftime. It wasn't even competitive. For the best team you've ever been on, take that, Aaron Rodgers.
Defense.
Yeah, discount double check that, bro.
That was truly, I thought of you, Chris, during Monday Night Football when he joined the Mannings and the Manning cast and Eli brought up that team. And I heard him say, I thought that was our best team. And I go, man, somewhere Chris Canty right now, sitting around puffing out the chest a little more than 9-9, looming large in whatever room he was in the crib right now here. That is People Don't Forget here on Canty and Golic Jr. We had to clear out space for the one-man wrecking crew on this one because, man, if you thought Hubbard Kush was the one coming to Aaron Rodgers, I assure you he has no idea how deeply personal can get. But coming up next, let's take a look at one of the men that Chris Canty knows very well in Eli Manning, because we had an incredible quarterback class in that 2004 group here. Eli Manning, Phillip Rivers, both now since left football, and with likely the last home game that we'll see from Ben Roethlisberger coming up this past weekend, we now face the prospect of all three of those quarterbacks finally being out of pro football here. So you know we got to rank them next on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests appear via the Goodyear Hotline. Hit us up on the Dr. Pepper Twitter line at Mike Golic Jr., at Chris Canty 99, and Gojo. Feeling a little nostalgic today, especially after we saw Big Ben play his last home game, or what we believe to be his last home game at Heinz Field on Monday night with the Steelers beating the Cleveland Browns. But it feels like one of those situations where we have to look back and reflect on the 2004 draft class that featured three prominent quarterbacks, that being Eli Manning, that's my quarterback, Ben Roethlisberger, and Phillip Rivers. And so I think the question is, when we start talking about their careers, if you had to redraft them, what order would you have these three quarterbacks in?
Yeah, I mean, Chris, this is where I feel bad because I don't like having to say this in front of you because I understand how much you value Eli Manning, what a great friend he's been to you, what an awesome teammate he was. I saw you guys at your guys' Super Bowl reunion when the Los Angeles Rams came and played the New York Giants that day. Like, I see
that was about the only good thing that happened on that day.
Oh, yeah, no, there wasn't no about. That was the only good thing that happened on that day in MetLife. But, Chris, I've always said I would go probably – in this instance of the quality of quarterbacks here, I'd probably go Ben Roethlisberger, Phillip Rivers, and then Eli Manning. I think I've got to give Ben that nod because of the combination of both accomplishment at the top end and elite statistical prowess here. Phillip Rivers, I think, was an exceptional quarterback who got shouldered with a lot of really cruddy teams. And then Eli Manning is such an interesting case study because he was, as you always say, at his best when his best was asked and called upon of him in those two magical postseason runs. But outside of that, there were those slumps where there were basically more pick sixes than any other quarterback you could see in football.
Yeah, and then the overall regular season record doesn't help him either, right? He's 117-117. So having a 500 record, it definitely speaks to the, you know, the peaks and valleys that we've seen throughout his career. But, I mean, at the highest of highs, Eli Manning, I mean, he's responsible for two of the most memorable moments that we've had in all of Super Bowl history, that being the David Tyree helmet catch in defeating the undefeated New England Patriots in 2007 in Super Bowl 42. And then, of course, the Mario Manningham throw on the go-ahead drive to beat the Patriots in 2011 in Super Bowl 46. So I just, when it comes to top end performance at the, when the stage is at the biggest and the lights are the brightest, I feel like you have to give Eli Manning the nod. Now, that's not to take away from what Ben did in that Super Bowl against the Arizona Cardinals, where he ends up leading that game winning drive and that throw to Santonio Holmes in the back of the end zone. So he can come up clutch in some pretty big situations as well. But you know, I got to side with my quarterback Eazy-E, man, because he's made some throws that only a handful of quarterbacks in the history of the NFL could have possibly made. So the fact that he did them on the biggest stage, that's why I got to give him the tip of the cap. Also, he's my teammate. So if I had to redraft the quarterbacks, I would go Eli Manning, Ben Roethlisberger, and Phillip Rivers. Now, Gojo, I will say this about their careers. I think they all landed with the right franchises where they got drafted, because I don't necessarily know if Ben Roethlisberger works out in New York, especially with all the things that he's had to deal with. We know Eli Manning didn't want to play for the San Diego Chargers because of the organization. And then with Phillip Rivers, I'm not necessarily sure how that would have played in a different market outside of the one that he played in for the majority of his career. So I would say that all three of those guys probably went to the best places that they could have gone when we consider the three franchises that we're talking about.
I'd have paid good money to see Phillip Rivers rock a bolo tie in New York, though. Like, between that, the dadgummit, all the trash talking, like, all these things for Phillip Rivers that make, because you're right, it is interesting to look at the styles that make the fights and the personality fits a quarterback here, because we all talk about, you got to be a unique personality to be able to succeed in New York, where you are either so in deep on that city, and you can show up at the Met Gala and be at all these places in the mix with the people that are outside of the world of sports there, or you can be Eli Manning, who's basically immune to all of it. That's why so many people were excited about Daniel Jones khakis walking into this thing, because they figured, man, that guy ain't interested in any of that stuff. He's just going to be about ball here. But, Chris, it's obviously a lot more than that, and the fact that we have all three of these guys that are going to be likely Hall of Famers is patently obscene. But I think of anyone there, like, I think you're right about Ben Roethlisberger. He seemed to be a unique fit in Pittsburgh. You know, he talked about the blue-collar mentality stuff. Obviously, like you mentioned, there is the irrefutable off-the-field issues that Ben Roethlisberger dealt with, the accusations of impropriety there and all those things that I think certainly – I think it's a lot about the time and place when that happened. We were less attuned with that than we are now, but also the market where that happened, as opposed to a place like New York, where considerably more eyes would have been on that situation.
No doubt about it. And that's why I say I don't know that any one of those guys would have been able to handle the pressure that Eli Manning was stepping into. Keep it in mind, the Giants didn't have the number one overall pick. They had the fourth pick. And they traded that along with a future first-round draft pick that turned out to be Sean Merriman for the rights to Eli Manning. And so stepping into a situation where there's already that kind of pressure based on how you dictated the pre-draft process and how you forced the hand of the Chargers, and then living up to the Manning name, knowing that your father, Archie, played in the league, knowing that your brother, Peyton, was ascending to one of the greatest quarterbacks of a generation, like, that was a lot of pressure to step into. I'm not quite sure that anybody could have handled that as gracefully as Eli Manning did and had the level of success that he did in the town like New York. So I got to give him the nod when it comes to that intangible. But that being said, I think for when you start talking about top-end ability, Ben Roethlisberger is the best of the three of them. Like, in terms of the physical tools and playing the quarterback position, just some of the things that I've seen Big Ben do, shrugging off defensive linemen, shrugging off linebackers, extending plays, throwing the ball 40, 50 yards downfield on a rope. Like, I just feel like when you start breaking down just the physical tools, Ben Roethlisberger is head and shoulders ahead of Eli Manning and Phillip Rivers.
Yep, that was certainly the calling card of Ben Roethlisberger. I mean, it's ironic as we watch the end potentially of Antonio Brown's career. That was a relationship that defined so much of his time in Pittsburgh during the meat of those years, that almost extrasensory perceptive connection between the two where they were always on the same page. And so you've got three of those quarterbacks that are now poised to leave the game. As Ben Roethlisberger outlasting the rest of that group is not something that I anticipated based on that style of play that you described, but now we've got potentially a world starting next year where that 0-4 quarterback class and that top end, all three of those future Hall of Famers off the field, and certainly very different legacies, like you mentioned, very different strengths, but all probably going to be wearing gold jackets sometime in the near future. Coming up next, though, as we get towards Week 18 now, we know what unfortunately comes after the season. A lot of temptation for coaching changes in the NFL. We'll take a look at some of the hot seat candidates next.
Thanks for listening to Canty and Golic Jr., the podcast. You can check the guys out live weekday afternoons at 4 Eastern on ESPN Radio and on ESPN+.